be here give a talk. So thanks to the organizers for the invitation. So in this talk, I will discuss the possibilities to test the GR at cosmological scales. What happened?
Kill the microphone.
So this is the usually blame modified gravity.
Yeah.
So GR has already achieved great success in the cosmos. The standard for the modeling is based upon GR. We just need to introduce two free parameters, dark matter and dark energy. Then the standard cosmology is basically able to explain every piece of observations. So this is certainly a great success. But there is a loophole in this argument that may make us feel uneasy. That is that we don't have robust and independent tests of GR at scales of galaxy and above. So in principle, so dark matter and dark energy can be explained away by modified gravity. So I think Wien will give a comprehensive review on the models of dark matter and dark energy and modified gravity. So I will skip the explaining the models and I will focus on testing GR in the cosmos. So basically, to test GR, we need to confront every model against observations. And for those cosmological observations, they are able to be divided into two classes. One measures the zeroth order distribution of the universe. That is basically the overall expansion and the geometry of the universe. So for this, we have the familiar distance redshift relation and also the Hubble expansion rate. And this measurement would contain valuable information on the nature of gravity. And beyond that, so we have the large-scale structure. This large-scale structure will tell us the fluctuations in the space-time matrix, such as the gravitational potentials, and also the fluctuations in the matter-energy fluid. Those things also contain valuable information on the nature of dark energy and and the nature of gravity. And the information contained here and here are actually complementary. So the good things in cosmology is that we now have so many tools to measure the expansion and the large-scale structure and the universe. So people have made impressive measurements on all of these things, and due to those ongoing and planned large-scale surveys, so in the near future, we are able to improve the data quality by orders of magnitude. So with all these things, we are able to perform more and more stringent tests of general relativity. So basically, given these observations, we are able to test specific models. For example, if you have type 1 in supernova and WMAP, you are able to test the popular model, the DDP model. And current data shows that the DDP is disfavored with respect to lambda CDM. So far, so good. But the problem is that we don't have a final theory on this dark universe. So in principle, there are infinite number of dark energy models and modified gravity models. One can show that. So there are enough degrees of freedom such that we can tune these models for them to reproduce any observations of the expansion rate. So that is to say, even if we have a perfect measurement on the Hubble parameter and on the distance redshift relation, so we are never able to see unambiguous world of gravity without any modeling or parameterization. Thus, to make a robust distinction between dark energy and modified gravity, we must go beyond the expansion rate measurement. And namely, we must have a measurement on the large-scale structure. So with the large scale structure, one thing for sure is that we can improve the constraint on the dark energy and modify the gravity. For example, with GMB, especially with the integrated dark wolf, in fact, we are able to improve the constraint through this DGT model. And now we have a weak lens measurement, and we have also robust measurement on the galaxy clustering. They are also useful to test gravity. For example, in this paper, so they have used this galaxy weak lensing and galaxy clustering to constrain a Yukawa-like potential like this. And Jeff has discussed a lot on using the redshift distortion to measure dark energy and modify the gravity. And so this is the result from the VBDS like this. And this is the theory prediction from the lambda scale. And this one is the result of the DGP. So given the error of the VBDS, it has difficulty to distinguish between this lambda scale from the DGP. But now, Wiggles has released three new data points with smaller error bars and covers a wider redshift range. It even goes to slightly higher redshift. So given the Wiggles measurement, so certainly it is already able to put an interesting constraint on this DGP model. So this is yet another example on testing gravity with the large scale structure. And this is using the cluster bonds to test the FR gravity model. And this parameter describes basically the deviation from general relativity. So this is the current constraint. I think Fabian will talk about it later in his talk. The dark degeneracy between modified gravity and dark energy is more severe than what I showed before. Actually, even if you have data of the large scale structure, there can still be a dark degeneracy. For example, if you have only one or two pieces of large scale structure measurement, you can still have enough degrees of freedom that you can tune these dark energy models or modified gravity models, such they can mimic each other exactly in this large scale structure measurement. And one can prove that to make an unambiguous distinction between a general dark energy model from a modified gravity model, you need to have at least three independent large scale structure measurements. Here, I mean that we will need the measurement to measure the two gravitational potentials, which I will explain later, and at least another measurement on the density, on the matter energy fluid fluctuations. So whether or not we are able to make all these three independent measurements, it is a problem. But certainly that is a goal for observations to come after.
So can I ask you something? So are you, when you say dark energy model, you mean do you allow interaction between dark matter and dark energy?
Not really, but we will allow. So that is another layer of complexity. So even if we restrict to those models with no interaction between dark matter and dark energy, so this dark energy can still have fluctuations, right? Once it can have fluctuations due to its limited sound speed or due to anisotropic stress, then it will have extra degrees of freedom to mimic the modified gravity. So, but if you restrict the discussion to the smooth dark energy models, then this kind of dark degeneracy will go away. So it really depends on how well do we understand dark energy. So if you don't, just choose a general dark energy model with fluctuations, so that is.
So what the scale of fluctuations you're talking about?
The thing is that, so usually when we talk about the dark energy, we have already, for example, implicitly assumed that the sound speed is so large that we can neglect the fluctuations below the at sub-horizon scales. But in principle, there is no real Lugo theorem to prohibit you the dark energy to have a small sound speed. For example, it can even have a sound speed close to zero. And in that case, so this fluctuation or this clustering can happen at the scale of that dark matter cluster.
So I mean, the concern is that if you do allow dark energy and dark matter interaction, then in principle you cannot distinguish between dark energy model and modified gravity model, because you can always write down your Einstein tensor as energy momentum tensor for matter plus something else and call that dark energy.
Yeah, that is a fair argument. So if you allow for this thing. So, and also when I said this, I said that if you are able to measure these three independent things, but for this thing, I'm not really sure. For example, in the microlensing, what do microlensing really measure? We would see that it measures the matter fluctuations, but actually, it isn't necessarily true. What is really measured is the spatial fluctuation or the metric fluctuations of the universe. You really need a theory to relate this metric fluctuation to either the matter or energy fluctuations. And for this, it is kind of model dependent. So here I want to address the importance to have multiple proofs. So the observed universe, or the observable universe, is some initial universe evolved according to some physical principles. So now our task is to infer the nature of matter and gravity from this observable universe. But there are many layers of uncertainty. First of all, we need to make sure that our universe, the observable universe, is a fair subsample of the universe. So usually we assume this cosmological principle. This one is based upon the Copernican principle. And in the literature, people can show that if you throw away this Copernican principle, suppose you live in a huge gigantic void, you can explain the cosmic acceleration without dark energy. So certainly, uncertainties here would cause uncertainties in our understanding of gravity and energy. Another layer of uncertainty is these initial conditions. For example, the initial fluctuations will also present as the nuisance parameters in our understanding of dark energy and modified gravity in the late universe. And this uncertainty here would again cause uncertainties here. And third of all, as I said before, we don't have a final theory on the dark universe. So without it, there are many possibilities, and it causes the two dark degeneracy that I explained earlier. So this is another layer of uncertainty. The final one is a technical one. Even if we have a first principles, still we want to connect this first principle to the observable universe. And we know that our universe is now in the evolution of the universe is nonlinear. So it is really difficult to deal with the nonlinearity of the universe. So this is another layer of uncertainty. But with multiple proofs, so we are able to significantly improve our situation. For example, SPT Act, so hopefully we are able to have a very good measurement on the kinetic at-Z effect of galaxy clusters. This kinetic at-Z effect of galaxy clusters will present us a very model-independent test of this Copernican principle. And thus, so alleviate the uncertainty here. And if we have two pieces of measurement on the large-scale structure, then so we can get rid of this uncertainty in the initial fluctuations, at least in the linear regime. So this helped us to reduce the uncertainty here. And what I will show later is that if you have multiple proofs. Even if we don't know the first the two physical principles, we are still able to perform some less model independent, so less model dependent tests of general relativity. So let me show you one example of what we can do with the multiple proofs of the universe. So, as I said, we have given two sets of measurements, one on the expansion rate, the other on the structure growth rate. And for a universe with GR, cold dark matter, and smooth dark energy, the structure growth rate is determined in the linear regime, is determined by this second order linear differential equation. And in this equation, so delta is the matter of density. And all the coefficients are actually determined by this expansion rate. That means that if we fix the expansion rate, the structure growth rate is fixed. So this is the consistency relation of general relativity. And because we are able to measure both sides, we are able to test this consistency relation in a robust way. So for example, this is a test done by Wang et al. In 2007. So basically, this quantity describes the expansion of the universe, and this one describes the structural growth of the universe. If GR is correct, if dark energy is smooth, so then these two quantities should be equal to each other, and thus lie on this diagonal line. So these are different contours are the constraints from different data sets. So let's look on this black one. This is the result combining all the data. You see that it is indeed consistent with GR. So of course, the error bar here is quite large. But with future surveys, so the accuracy can be improved significantly. And actually, we can have even more than one way to perform this consistency relation. So there are several versions on how to test this kind of consistency relation. So if you basically, if you combine the supernova and rebalancing, or if you combine the baryon acoustic oscillation and the redshift distortion, so you can do this kind of consistency test. And at, for example, here, it's somewhere around 1% accuracy. So the test on the consistency relation is an important step to test the GR at cosmological scales. But we may want to go a step further. So we want to know the physics behind this consistency relation. So this consistency relation begins with this GR field of equation. So for this, so we can choose a gauge, usually because we are dealing with the large-scale structure, we care about the scale of the visions. And for the scale of the visions, so there are just 2 degrees of freedom, the 2 gravitational potential in front of the time and in front of the space. So once we fix this gauge, so we can derive these 2 equations. So this is a generalized Poisson equation. It tells us the overall ability of a matter concentration to distort the space-time. And the other relation will tell us the ratio of these 2 gravitational potentials. And in GR, so these 2 potentials are basically equivalent. So now, given these 2 relations, we are able to derive this GR consistency relation. So the previous test tests this relation. So this is a step to test the GR. But now, what I want to show you is that we are able to go a step further and to test these 2 relations. So basically, also these 2 relations will motivate us to parameterize the modified gravity models. So let's look at the large-scale structure, the structural growth of the universe. So given an initial matter distribution, so we will know this gravitational potential, with the coupling of the Newtonian constant. And then, using the equivalent relation between these two gravitational potentials, we get this potential in front of the time. And it is this potential accelerate those non-relativistic particles and tell us what would be the acceleration and what would be the new velocity. And given this new velocity, we are able to move the particles to get a new meta distribution and become the full circle. So this is the structural growth in the in GR. So naturally, if you want to modify the gravity, so then we want to modify these two pieces, these two key parameters. So we can replace this coupling constant, Newtonian coupling constant, namely the Newtonian constant, with just a parameter g effective, and just use a parameter eta to describe this ratio between these two gravitational potentials. And so this is one version to parameterize the modified gravity. And in the literature, there are a lot of them, and some of them are basically equivalent. So, and indeed, when we parameterize this thing into this form, these two parameters indeed contains valuable information on the dark energy. For example, in different modified gravity models, this parameter would take different forms, and it would then be nice to measure these parameters. So, let me show you how to test this generalized Poisson equation. So this is the equation that we want to test. So to test it in observation, we need to measure both the left-hand side and the right-hand side. And we can recognize immediately that, so this side, the left-hand side, is basically measured by the gravitational lensing. But there is a little complexity. This is written down in the 3D, in 3D space. And for lensing, it's just a 2D projection. And we need to somehow recover the redshift information and recover the missing 3D. So what we can do is to basically to cross-correlate our gravitational lensing with a galaxy survey with a known redshift. And this, for this kind of cross-correlation, we are able to recover this redshift information and it goes from two dimension to three dimension. So basically, we are able to measure the left-hand side. And what about the right-hand side? So the trouble is how to measure this density, the meta-density. So to do this kind of exercise, we are not able to use the galaxy over density as a proxy of the meta-density because the galaxy bias is completely degenerated with this effective Newton's constant. So what we propose is to reconstruct this density from the superior velocity measurement. And because we have this continuity relation equation in the linear regime, it tells us how to relate from the velocity to the density. So, but now the problem is that how to measure the superior velocity. This is known to be a very difficult problem. But the good thing is that we have the redshift distortion, and Jeff has talked the great promise that redshift distortion can tell us. So he also cautioned us that there are all kinds of systematic errors in this redshift distortion modeling. So here, I will focus more on the theory side of the redshift distortion uncertainty. So basically, if you look at the full expression of the redshift distortion, so it has many terms. Besides the euro terms to the nu to the fourth order, here nu is the cosine of the k vector, wave k vector, with respect to the line of sight. So there are some high orders. So but usually, people will just neglect these terms and to get something, a nice form like this. So many people have used that. For example, in the Tegmark has used this kind of equation to analyze the 2D app and Sloan data and to get the velocity power spectrum. And we can make further assumptions. For example, if you assume that the galaxy bias is deterministic, I mean, the galaxy density and the galaxy velocity, the relation between galaxy density and the galaxy velocity is deterministic, then this relation can be simplified for something like this. So now it comes in, this familiar beta term shows up. But still, people can make even further approximation. That is, usually in this beta is f divided by the galaxy bias. And we know that the galaxy bias can be scale dependent. But in many analyses, so we can make further assumption or approximation that the bias is scale independent. So this has been adopted in many data analyses. But even so, those are just a few approximation. Actually, there are more. For example, the linear evolution in both the density and the velocity field, the light cone effect, especially for those low redshift surveys, and the distance observer approximation is also a problem. And also this cosmic distortion, such as namely the AP test, is again, you know, if you are not corrected, it will bias your result. So here, I don't want to be either too optimistic or too pessimistic. So I will take an intermediate step. So I will use this relation to do my forecast for the theoretical study. So how accurate this relation is something definitely deserves intensive investigation. So, but from now, I will focus on this one. Stick to this relation. So basically, the peculiar velocity will make the galaxy clustering from isotropic to anisotropic. And in phrase this, it can be written like this. So here, the redshift space galaxy power spectrum is related to the three power spectrum in the real space. So this is the galaxy density power spectrum in the real space. This is the cross correlation between the galaxy density and the velocity. This is the velocity auto correlation power spectrum. So to test the Poisson equation, what I really want is this. And I know that, so given there are different directional dependents, I'm able to separate all of the three components. But to test the Poisson equation, I will only use this one. So basically, I can construct an estimate, I call it EG. So basically, which is the ratio of two power spectrum. So the one on top is the galaxy-galaxy length measured from the wavelength survey. And the bottom one is the cross-correlation between the galaxy density and the velocity reconstructed from the redshift distortion. So I can simply take the ratio, and then I will find that this ratio basically is a test of the Poisson equation, but up to a parameter, this f, which is the logarithmic growth of the density. So this estimator has a...
That doesn't sound right, because the velocities don't give you delta, they just give you a gradient of psi. Isn't that right?
Oh, I will talk to that later.
But so, it seems to me that just gives you the ratio of phi minus psi to psi.
No, that one I have a later estimator on this thing. But here, basically, the assumption is that so that is only the matter fluctuations. Right? If you only have the matter fluctuations, you know the continuity equation allow you to relate from the velocity to the density. And then you can use this to reconstruct the density.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if in your interested model of dark matter dark energy interaction, So this assumption will be violated if it will be no longer true.
Yeah.
But then in that case, you are not able to apply this.
But even if the dark matter and dark matter energy don't interact with each other.
No, if there is no, if dark energy is smooth, then this is correct. Because there is indeed a continuity equation, right? And we also know that, so for the galaxies, so at a large scale, they should also only sense the gravity. And they are just like dark matter. Their collision is particles. So at sufficiently large scale, they should face each other in the velocity. Namely, the velocity of dark matter should be the velocity of, the velocity of galaxies should be the velocity of dark matter.
But that's true. So the velocities are the same, but the densities are not the same.
No, but here is that. So, yeah, there are. The first is that the velocity is the redshift distortion measures the galaxy velocity.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know the galaxy velocity is equal to the dark matter velocity.
Mm-hmm.
And for the dark matter velocity, we have a continuity equation at sufficiently large scale. It doesn't hold at large scale.
The equivalence principle guarantees that for GR, right? I mean,
it's a pretty robust prediction. First of all, we know that the galaxies, at sufficiently large scale, are collisions, right? And they only sense gravity. So it's just like a dark matter particle, collisions.
But if you screen, looking at gravity for galaxies, because they're high density or something, right?
You mean those kind of chameleon effect or
something? Something like that. You can imagine.
Yeah, for that is a further complexity.
But, I mean, a fire has that effect. Is
Lens
not weaker?
Yes.
But the same thing.
I'll maybe talk about it a little bit on Friday.
Yeah, again, these are examples on how difficult it is to test the GR in a model independently. So it is really difficult. For every test, there would be some hidden assumptions. So basically, for this one, a good thing is that there is no galaxy bias problem. So this galaxy bias appears here, but also appears here. They will just cancel. And also, there is no...
For this Article 1, right, yeah.
Pardon? No, it doesn't really matter. So it doesn't matter if it is a deterministic bias or so the only thing required is the relationship between this potential and the velocity is deterministic. That is the only requirement. It doesn't require
galaxy galaxy lensing, is measuring R times bias times.
Yeah, this is also R times. Again, this is a cross-correlation.
Okay. The biases cancel if the luminosities for the two samples are the same. The galaxy samples have to be the same.
It is the same sample. Yeah. This is a good point. And because all two are the power spectrum, so both are proportional to the initial fluctuations. So in the linear regime, so the initial fluctuation will cancel out. So we get rid of another layer of Newtonian parameters. And thirdly, so this quantity is really sensitive to the nature of gravity. For example, in Lambda scan, this one should be a scale-independent quantity. But in modified gravity, it can show some scale dependence. So this is the forecast that we done 3 years ago for various surveys. Basically, to do this kind of test, we need a survey of weak lensing, and also we need the redshift distortion. So in some cases, we need to combine two surveys. For example, the most of both with LSFT, or the JDM with LSFT. Or just with a single survey, such as square column array, because it can reconstruct weak lensing from the cosmic magnification. So the SKA will have both the weak lensing measurement and the redshift distortion measurement. So we are able to test this and to measure this EG. So this is the forecast for the error. And this forecast is based upon the fiducial model lambda CDM. So the error bars are based upon lambda CDM. So this is basically the fiducial model. The error is as a function of scale at different redshift. And so these different lines are the different other predictions from different modified gravity model. So obviously, so this Harris, a relativistic version of the moon, shows a big difference from the Lambert theorem. So these two can be easily distinguished by those future surveys. And actually, one can say that since this EG in this thing will be measured to about 1% level accuracy, all the four models that we investigate, the GR, FR, DTP, and Kelly's will be distinguished one from another. And recently, so Reyes et al. Has done the first EG measurement using the Sloan LRG samples. They use 70,000 LRG samples and compare their lensing effect and their redshift distortion and get a measurement of EG like this. Basically, it is a measurement at about 10 to 40 megaparsec scales. So the prediction of the GR is somewhere here. And the data points is somewhere here. And the Tevis is a factor 2 below this measurement. So this the first EG measurement is already able to distinguish GR from this Tevis. But given the error bar, it isn't able to distinguish between the GR from the FR. But the good thing is that so those future surveys, so the stage 3 and stage 4 projects, will significantly reduce this error bar and then allow us to distinguish between GR and FR.
How should those data points on small scale should interpret it? Because there could be nonlinear redshift distortion and so on.
So this measurement actually they adopted a stronger assumption than what I adopted here. For example, they already assumed a deterministic bias and assume a certain form of the finger four. So that is the reason is that so when they see these things, they just cut off here. So for this, they can measure these things, but the measurement is.
So you have a prediction for FOR independent of the type of FOR?
I think we are.
It can be made arbitrarily possible.
So even for FR, you still have, because the function of FR is a free function, right? You have still have enough degrees of freedom to tune it to be sufficiently close to the R. Yeah, that is possible.
But can you make it larger? Probably not. More different.
Larger is
not if you want to be in the solar system. It's kind of large.
But it could have included Lambert CDM.
Yeah, of course.
So in the previous test, what I used is this one, the reconstruction measurement of this one. But actually, we have a measurement on this velocity power spectrum. And if we include this, so we are able to directly measure this gravitational potential, the particular velocity. And again, since weak lensing, what weak lensing measures is the minus of these two gravitational potential. If we combine these two measurements, so we are able to directly measure the ratio of the two gravitational potential. And in GR, or in GR plus dark matter plus smooth dark energy, this eta is 1. So any deviation of eta from 1 is a smoking gun of deviation from the lambda theorem or from a smooth dark energy model. And again, this is a forecast. What I forecast is for the square Coulomb array. And the big boss plus LSST would achieve similar accuracy. So this test is more difficult to do than the previous test, because it requires at least two redshift range. The reason is that, so this potential determines the acceleration instead of the velocity. So basically, we need to compare between two redshifts to get the acceleration. So that is that. So we need at least two redshift bins. And it's able to do it today, but maybe in 10 or 20 years, this is something applicable. And the good thing about this eta is that this eta is highly complementary to the EG measurement. For example, you see that in the previous plot, so those DGP model is very close to the lambda scale in this EG measurement. But in this eta measurement, this DGP model shows a very strong deviation from unity. So that is something which can be easily distinguished by this measurement.
What is this dark energy model with an isotropic stress?
Oh, this is it just assume a very a parameterized. There is no real model behind it. So another thing that I want to address is that in all these kind of forecasts, we know that we see that the error bar decreases towards small scale because in small scales there are more modes to use. Why do I stop here? The reason is well known. Here it reached this nonlinear regime. Although the measurement here can be much better, so the interpretation would be very difficult due to these nonlinearities. So how to deal with the nonlinearities is a big question. So one thing we are sure is that this nonlinear regime indeed contains valuable information on the gravity. So, for example, in the recent test by Daniel et al., they combined weak lensing and many other data sets to test the GR. So this is their contour, and this yellow thing, this yellow cross is the lambda scale. So in this test, so the GR is still consistent with the observations. And so is the other test by these two authors. Again, so this one is GR. It is again consistent with observations. So given the current error bar, so our understanding of the nonlinearity is kind of sufficient. So but in the future, so this error bar, this contour will be significantly shrink. And then, so if we are not able to understand the nonlinearity, robustly, it will bias our effort. For example, in previous analysis, people also often extract the existing fitting formula of the nonlinearity to those modified gravity models. So we can ask that how safe is this extrapolation? So we have run a bunch of embodied simulations on this, and what we found is that. So this extrapolation can be run by 20%. So it is kind of okay for the current data, but for those stage 4 dark energy projects, that is something we must correct for. And so this is another figure to show the error if you extract the existing formula to modify the gravity models. You can easily get a 20 to 30% error.
And this error due to what? Is it nonlinear power spectrum?
Yes, it is the if you use those kind of photographs Smith et al. To predict the nonlinearity in those modified gravity models. So you will get error.
Which model was this for?
So this is just a very simple parameterization. So I just change the effective Newton constant by 10% or 20% and this. So there are a bunch of them. So basically, it's a six set of simulations.
Because for some models, it's been found to be a good fit. Right? I guess it depends which model.
It's a good fit at the level of bigger than 10%.
Uh-huh.
So the reason that we are able to beat this down to 10% is that so we have tuned our simulation output such that different models have the same linear power spectrum. And then we compare the difference in the nonlinear one. So this one tells us how reliable is this model. And also, we also have a lot of tests on the mass resolution, initial redshift, and we even improve our metapower spectrum measurement method to correct for any possible idiocy effect at these scales. So after we done that, so then we found this.
I'm confused. So Smith et al. Is a fitting formula calculated to lambda c and gr.
Yes.
Why do we have, why do we think that does work for?
There is no reason. But because there is no fitting formula for a general modified gravity model, you have no choice.
Right. But then you shouldn't do it, right? Unless you invent one, I guess.
Yeah, so this paper actually, so one of the purposes of this paper is try to run a bunch of simulations and get a fitting formula. For example, for this, for the specific parameterization of modified gravity, we have found a fitting formula accurate to about 2% level accuracy. So, but the problem is that there are many more modified gravity models with other parameterizations.
Plus the baryons, you know, affect the power spectrum much more than this.
Yeah, this is another layer of complexity.
But what's the point then?
No, the thing is that, so here, is the baryon effect is important at error bigger than 2000. But this effect is already important at
so
error.
So here, one something, yeah.
So basically, we will run more simulations, for example, for those gamma index parameterization, and hopefully, we are able to find a more general fitting formula for this nonlinear evolution.
Gamma is not a theory, right? So I don't know how you run simulation for that.
No, the thing is that, so from the gamma, I'm able to convert that gamma to a time dependent zeta. And this zeta is related to my this thing. So once I know this thing, I know how to accelerate particles. So I just, once I know this, I can run.
You convert gamma to a specific model.
You
convert gamma to a specific model.
Yes, I can show that the gamma is equivalent.
What's gamma?
For
again?
Model
right? I mean, like,
so the gamma is that, so they just have a model, just this F.
That's stupid image.
Then there is a microphone about it.
So basically, so if you give a form like this, so I can find a form of zeta such that the linear evolution in this model is has this form. So that is an analytical expression for this.
But you're assuming a model anyway, right?
Yeah, definitely. You need to assume a model. Yeah.
But since the model has...
You assume GR with a different G effective?
Actually, it's more complicated than that. It's a G effective divided by EQ. So that is the other potential. So
basically, you assume a variation in G in eta that is such that gamma changes to a different constant.
So the thing, one can show that if you only care about the measure evolution, so what really what really matters is this quantity.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this quantity. So this one tells you this area. Once this is fixed, this is fixed. But from this to the weak lensing, so then you need this Euclidean again, so you need to find a function like this. So but for the, because this one can be done at the post process. For the simulation, it can just go to this step. So, but again, so there is again another layer of complexity. The previous, all these parameterizations are environmental dependent, but as shown in the FR and the DDP, so this since gravity, the behavior of gravity is environment dependent due to this chameleon effect, etc. And for this thing, we really need to run a real modified gravity simulations. So there are impressive works on those real simulations for FR and for DDP. I think you will hear this talk from Fabian or from Roman. Or maybe William on these simulations. So basically, this is final slide. So for the dark universe, basically, we don't know much. But our hope is that given so many probes, we are able to put everything together to reconstruct everything. So it's up to me, to you to believe it or not. Thanks.
All right, this topic will continue, but any more quick questions? Okay, all right, I think since it's a bit late, we'll go to lunch. So 2 p.m. is the colloquium, and that's in this room, and it's open to everybody at PI. So